It's time for the best 60 minutes of your life. This is the Homer Hour, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Alongside former Packer Brian Belaga, here's Emmy Award winner Homer.
Minutes of your day, the Brian Belaga Homer Hour. I am at where Brian Belaga probably wishes he was, playing golf at Hawkshoe Golf Club in Lake Geneva, because it's the Bo Ellis golf event where they raise money for the Nicole Ellis Foundation, and because I love talking about championships. It was 1977. So it's getting close to 50 years. It doesn't matter. All you need is one, and you can talk about it forever. And I would assume that, Brian, you would agree with that. You're in the club.
Yep. Yep. It's all that matters.
Everybody'd like to win more than one.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
But the difference between zero and one would be all the people that I will see later who were around in 77 who have been Brewer fans their entire life. They got zero. Zero is huge.
Zero.
The Cubs fans always were talked about as having the worst. They won. Boston, the Red Sox, for so many years, they won. They're not. The Brewers are it. Mm-hmm. Bucks had one. It took 50 years for another one, but still. That was only for the younger people who weren't alive when they won the one. You probably need to win one about every 50 years, every 40 years. Otherwise, a group of people live and die and never get a chance to experience one.
Every 40 years. Even my White Sox got one. Even my White Sox got one.
Yes. Oh, yes. And I would emphasize this. I would much rather be a White Sox fan than a Brewers fan. They got it. They got it. They're in the club. They have been horrific. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. I used to say I could take one every 10 years, but I could easily take one. I could take one every 30 years. I just got to have one.
Yeah.
2005, I was there.
Yep.
No one to this day knows how the hell they did it. How did they do it?
I don't know, man. It was a sweet run to watch. It really was. I enjoyed the heck out of it. And my dad went to a bunch of those games, too. I was still younger, but he went to a lot of those games, and because he got tickets to them, and he went and watched, and they were fun games to watch on TV, and Scott Pacednik and all. Just a fun.
Well, the closer just passed away this last week. I think I've forgotten the guy's name. The closer,
Bobby Jenks.
Bobby Jenks.
Yeah. And I believe, if I'm right, Ken Williams might have been the GM of the team. At that time, I don't know. I did his first baseball interview ever. He was a football and baseball player at Stanford, and he was the first round pick of the White Sox, whose team was in Appleton. It's A League, and so they just signed him. Like, it was probably a few days after, right around now, because just like when the current baseball draft, and phenomenal athlete, and then I think he was GM. But anyway, it's over. Your dad's in.
Yeah.
He's got it.
Yep. 100%. 100%.
Yeah.
And he grew up, obviously, on the south side of Chicago, so that's all he knew, was White Sox baseball. That's all he knew.
And all I knew about White Sox fans is they were the fightin'est baseball fans I've ever seen. When the Brewers were in the American League, they'd play the White Sox, and there would just be fist fights in the stands. They talk about Cubs fans, but White Sox fans, I would tell everybody, you get in a fight with anybody you want in baseball, except a White Sox fan. But anyway, no, and I think of, you know, the Packers, we debate if they should have won more often, and maybe, but you're in.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's the thing. And, you know, you and I always talk about this, too, and it's funny because, like, you know, I still have, I mean, I've got friends that I played with and, you know, guys that even I played with, you know, on the Packers team that were great players that never got one, never even got to one.
Yep.
Right. And it's like, it's just such a shame, right? Like, and the fact that I'm able to say that I have one, it's just,
no, it's, and it's the wild feeling that I know you had. I mean, I can't, I saw it, not that one, it was the one I saw in 96, in the locker room, and it was, maybe it was because they were expected to be so good. They just, they weren't screaming and yelling like a high school team or a college team. There was just such a, I mean, you could feel it that we're the best in the world. And yep. I'm in the club forever. Somebody like Don Beebe, who lost 4 with Buffalo. And that's great. It's incredible you go to Super Bowl 4 years in a row. But the White Sox fans got it better than the Buffalo Bills fans.
Yeah. And, right? And I mean, that, and I think why ours in 2010, it felt a different way because we were a 6 seed. Weren't supposed to be there. Like, it wasn't supposed to happen. Right? And I think that's what made it, it gave it a little more oomph to it. It gave it a little more juice. And that, that made guys in the locker room so much more, like you said, screaming like high schoolers and like cheering. Yes. Like, it just, it gave it a little more like of a, you know, high school feel to it after the victory. And like, that's all part of the feeling. And you know, and being in the club, like you can go around to, like, you know, you're not in the six club like Brady or guys like that, but you got one of them.
No, I would say this to Brady. The difference between 0 and 1 is a million times bigger than the difference between 1 and 6.
Oh, and
maybe it changes if you get 6 and you just have so many. But I think of the Packers won 5 in 7 years. And so that's incredible. But 0. All right, yeah. What's the difference between 2 and 3? It's the greatness of the team and your legacy and all that stuff. But there's nothing like 0. I mean, when Buffalo wins, everybody's going to win at some point, I think. It's just a question of whether or not you're still alive. But that's every time, aside from a team I root for, everything I want to see happen is a first-time winner, because that's just for the fans. Yep. You know, be it the Brewers, and it depends on what you're a fan of. If you're a fan of the Packers, you want money, but nothing's going to equal. The only thing I want to see before I die is the Brewers to win a World Series, because otherwise I get an ofer.
Yeah,
it's the worst ofer in the world. Follow a team for how many years and never won a title.
Do you think, and obviously because I only won one, I wouldn't know this, but do you think all those guys that won multiple, so like you asked the Jordans and you asked the Bradys and them, do you think they would always say the hardest one was the first one? That's always the hardest one, is the first, and the rest of them, because you have that recipe, you can continue on? Or do they say the hardest one's the second one, and then after the second one, it's smooth sailing? Like, I don't know, because I never got the second one. I thought the second one, you know, in 2011 was going to be nice and smooth sailing, but it didn't end up being that way, right? Like, and then I thought in 2014, okay, I'm like, all right, we had to wait a few years, but here we go. We're going to get it in 2014, and, well, that didn't happen, you know? And then 2016, we got hot, and I go, okay, here we go. 2016, we had to wait. You know, we had to wait 6 years, but all right, we're going to do it again. And nope. So, like, I just don't know what those guys would say. What's the hardest one, the first or the second, or what it would be?
And I would say, I don't know that, but you know, like, the one, if I were you, that would be the toughest with 2011. Because you have basically the same team. I think when the same people are around and you're so good, then you think, you know, with this group, eventually that's the part with the Patriots. It's so incredible that they did it with so many different groups. I mean, they won, I think, 3 and 4 years when they had all those. So that was that group that was so good. But imagine, Brian, Imagine if you had none. Imagine if you don't win in 10 and you deal with all those years that you talked about. You probably would have said, I might as well have played for Buffalo.
Yeah.
You know, the hardest clearly has to be so close and not do it. But if you got zero, you got zero.
Yeah, I mean, that's the truth. I mean, so, yeah, I mean, I guess the thing would be to get the first. That's got to be the hardest, is to get the first. Yeah. That's got to be the hardest, because without getting one, you got none.
And that's, right, that's and I don't debate. Care. Like, and I mean, there's a you know this from the people you played with, that there's a level of excellence that's different for each player. I can tell you the toughest, I never had anything I did twice, but the toughest would have been for me the second one, because I'm done. I don't care. I'm in.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, I become a billionaire. Is the second billion going to be as good as the first? No. I mean, whatever team you root for, and then you can get disappointed. But I feel badly for Brewer fans.
Yeah.
And you don't, college. I mean, I think, again, we're talking because I'm at the Boyle's golf tournament and they won in 77, but like Wisconsin, there'll never be. I mean, I was there doing the game when Wisconsin lost to Indiana in triple overtime at home the year Indiana won the national title with Steve Alford, and I always thought that was terrible. No, I'll never forget the moment in the second half when I turned to somebody when Wisconsin was playing Duke and going, they're going to win this game. I didn't say they could win it. And it's the worst feeling in the world, because mm-hmm. Unless you're 100, they got 0-2. It was 19, yep. 41, I think. And, I mean, you think of how great different Iowa teams were. Yep. Coaches you had in basketball, Lute Olson and stuff. It's still 0.
Oh, yeah. And it's going to be that way for a while.
I don't – but then you think of Oklahoma or whatever, and you just you just need one. That's it. Just one. But and those they never. I mean, a Rose Bowl win's nice. There are things that there's a special feeling than that. And that was certainly the case at Wisconsin, and I'm sure. Well, no, Iowa was top ranked in the country at times under Hayden Fry. I know that, right? I mean, they were.
Yep.
They then, if you could just find the easiest bowl game when you were number one, then win the national title that way. The way Notre Dame did with Lou Holtz. Let's find West Virginia. Let's play them. Because we're in, then we win it. But, you know, there's I don't know how you can explain to people just there's nothing. I don't know, but the feeling probably gets better year after year, unless just to see other people that aren't in the club and players that are really good. And I understand better now. You can agree or comment on it. Like, as a player, especially on a team sport, so much of it is beyond your control. You can be so good and never win because your teammates weren't good enough or the coaches weren't good enough. It's just, I don't want to say it's luck, but that to me would be, I mean, I think you could think of Barkley or different players in different sports, or yep. Barry Sanders, someone who you're just wowed at how good they are. Doesn't matter.
Oh, yeah.
You got to have a GM or a coach or...
You see,
you
I mean,
players.
You almost see it right now in the AFC with like Buffalo and with Baltimore.
Yes.
Like you see it right now, right? Like it's happening in real life, in real time with Baltimore.
But they're in the club. They got one.
No, I know, but Lamar doesn't. Lamar doesn't.
Lamar
have one,
doesn't.
No. Yeah,
yes.
You know what I mean? Like that's what he's the current
yes, for the
quarterback.
Players.
Like that.
Yeah,
yeah, for the player or Josh Allen. He's the you know, and they're that's Buffalo.
Right.
But, like, that's a perfect example is Buffalo right now with Josh Allen. Like, how, like, that team plays so good and then something just happens when they see Kansas City in the playoffs and it just goes away. And, like, they just can't find a way to do it and Kansas City moves on. And it's just, like, you feel bad. Like, you really do. Like, and it doesn't matter how good Allen plays, Kansas City doesn't. And I do feel bad. I do feel
and
bad
then,
for
this isn't football, and I wasn't watching. I just saw the highlight. They had some of the women's golf majors, and on the last hole, the girl hits the ball in the water, hit one of the worst shots ever, and her next shot, she chips in to stay. Can you imagine her opponent, who had never won a major either? Like, come on.
Okay,
hit
punch.
It 2 inches away. She makes birdie hitting the ball. I don't know that I've ever seen that before. Hitting the ball in the water and still made birdie.
It was a par five. So she dumped it in the water.
She dunked it in the water on her second shot. The three penalty. She's hitting four from like just, well, you can look it up and watch. It's from just an impossible behind some bridge or something and something like that. And chips it in for four. The other girl makes four, and so no, there's no way you're making four. You're making five or six. This one is over. I'm holding the trophy.
Yep. The minute that ball splashes, you're going, this is done.
It's done. And she still stays an over, and the girl who chipped in did it. All right, we'll take a break. All right. And I think the reason, I think the Brewers are a good enough team where they have a chance if their pitchers continue to pitch at this high level. So it's not easy. There's no way they can be as good as the Dodgers given the talent. But in a shorter series with pitching that's really good, you can pull it off. And that's why I brought it up, because I could say to you, if the White Sox can do it, the Brewers can do it 1 year.
Yep.
Next.
This is the Homer Hour on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
The Brian Bulaga Homer Hour. I am at the Bo Ellis Golf event for the Nicole Ellis Foundation, and I'm here because people are here that remember 1977, the national championship. And I'm sure they'll have some sort of 50 anniversary coming up in 2027. This is the Brian Bulaga Homer Hour, and now, as he does, not as well as he blocked, but pretty close, his partner assistance.
That's right. I want to talk about my friends at Surfside. Summer is heating up, and there's nothing more refreshing than a nice cold Surfside iced tea and vodka or Surfside lemonade and vodka to break the heat. I like Surfside more than all those other drinks because it tastes cleaner and doesn't leave your mouth feeling like you got a sugary, nasty taste in your mouth after you get done drinking it. They also got great flavors, like my favorite, the half tea, half lemonade, peach tea, raspberry lemonade, and so many more. Made with real brewed tea and real vodka, Surfside is only 100 calories, 2 grams of sugar, and zero bubbles. That's right, no carbonation, so it's easy to sip and enjoy no matter what your plans are this weekend. Look for the can with the sunset stripes, sold at bars, restaurants, and stores near you. Must be 21. Please drink responsibly.
I had a friend who has given me other Packer tickets in the past to buy during the season, and I've used them for various reasons. He offered me 4 tickets. Pebble, maybe you can look it up. I think it's in August. Is it against Seattle, I think? I don't even know what their home preseason games are, but he said something like the tickets were $78 or something. He said, make me an offer, and I thought, I wouldn't pay a dollar. If you gave them to me free, I'm not going to the game, because I don't even think preseason games, again, I will defer to you, I don't think they're even what they used to be in terms of how players are used. Go back to your first year and what preseason football games were like. I'm curious.
Oh, preseason when I was a rookie, man, it was intense. It was, guys were playing. Like, it was, I remember I went out there. I mean, at least for me as a rookie, I went out there and I played about 3 quarters every game as a rookie. Mm-hmm. I did. Starters would go out there for a quarter in the first game, 2 quarters in the second game.
Right.
Essentially then like a quarter or a half and some change in the third game. And then obviously it would be up to McCarthy what he would do in the fourth game. Normally nothing in the fourth game. And then, you know, that would be that. But as a rookie for me, I did every single game, and I played a bunch in every single game, and it was
Was the coach's approach? Was it like, we want to win the game, or you don't know until then you get in the regular season and you see the prep? Or how close was it for any or all of those games to a regular season game?
It wasn't nearly as close as it was for a regular season game, just because of the time constraints and how many guys there were. They would go over basic plays that we were going to be doing, and they'd go over the structure of the defenses and things like that. But the prep time just wasn't there because they wanted to get their training camp prep in. You know, we would probably say we were playing, we'll just say Seattle, for example. We would probably spend maybe a day and a half, 2 days on Seattle before we would play them, and then would go play. Where obviously regular season, it's a full week. So it was way less, you know, extensive with how we game plan. But for the guys that were playing, you know, fighting for jobs, I mean, that's all it was. Like, I mean, you were all in on those couple days of prep to get ready to go play. And obviously as a rookie, I took it very, very, very seriously. Like, I was all in, and I was nervous as all hell going out there every series. It was my first NFL snaps. Even though it wasn't regular season, to me it was still NFL snaps, right? You're going out there, you're going against NFL players. I got to play some snaps with the starters, so I got to block for Aaron, that preseason. So I was very nervous for that, obviously. It was, to me, that rookie year of what preseason was a lot different than even to what year two was, because year two.
So what was year two like for you?
Well, for me, it was a little bit of the same. I didn't play as much. So like it was the next year, obviously, if we remember, it was the lockout year. So we kind of just got right into training camp. It was different. We got locked out and then we just reported to training camp and everything was kind of scaled back a little bit. We still had the preseason games, but the coaches knew we weren't technically in football shape, so they scaled our reps back quite a bit in preseason, at least the starters from that standpoint. But we still played a quarter here and then a half, but like not as much in the third game as what we normally. We maybe only played, you know, a quarter and some change in the third game, not as much as we got a lot of work in the second game compared to the third game as where it would normally be switched. Right. And then after that, it started to taper down. Like it started to go to like maybe a series or two. And then it went up to like a quarter. And then maybe just a quarter in the third game as well. And then
all right. So what was it like your last couple of years?
My last year with LaFleur, I played a quarter and a half against Baltimore, and that was it for the entire preseason. And that was it. And then with LA, I didn't play a single snap in preseason. Even with McCarthy, I barely played any. I mean, I might have played like a series or two the whole preseason. Like I just did. There was no preseason. Like
I guess I would have to check, but I'd ask you. Is it possible that it's even softer now? I don't know how much less you can play than none, but I don't. That doesn't change whatever the head coach or the philosophy is or how you're using practice time. What do you think it is? Can you even tell now or not really?
I think now, because of what has changed, which wasn't a big deal or it wasn't a thing with the Packers when Mike was there, was the joint practices. LaFleur utilizes the joint practices. We didn't do any joint practices when McCarthy was there. Ted didn't believe in them. Ted hated the joint practices, never wanted to do them. Mike really
did
wasn't.
Did he ever say why?
Well, Ted didn't like contact at practice to begin with. If Ted could have put us just in helmets and had us run around out there, Ted would have preferred that. I mean, Ted
because
didn't
of
want
injuries, do you think? I mean, he played in the league, so he clearly knows
NFL football
just to stay healthy.
Yeah, Ted didn't want guys getting hurt before we had to go out there and actually probably get hurt. Like, that was going to be what was going to happen. he knew it was going to happen. He knew it was going to happen.
I don't know that I ever asked that or knew that. We'll ask that with Jason on Thursday when he's on. But I never knew that. But again, he deferred somewhat to his coach. But I'm sure they had to be aware of what his thought was.
Oh yeah, but I mean, Mike still ran the practice the way Mike ran the practice. Ted didn't stop the. I mean, Mike ran a physical practice. The practices were extremely physical. Like, they were not.
Oh, okay.
Mike ran a hard training camp. It was very difficult. But I'm just talking from.
And like LaFleur, not as much.
LaFleur's training camp's a lot lot different. It's very high tempo, high fast. It's very in and out, in and out, in and out. Where Mike's were long periods, very physical and grinder out type practices, where LaFleur's is very fast and it's very high tempo, high speed. They're just different philosophies of what you're looking to do. Where LaFleur obviously is a big believer in the joint sessions, and Mike and Ted were not believers in that. So when you're not when you don't do those types of things, that's why we did a lot of preseason with Mike. We played in the preseason. That was something we did. And, you never knew how many snaps you were going to get. Were you going to get a quarter? Were you going to get two series? Were you going to get two quarters? I mean, you just didn't know going into a game. There were guys who knew, right? The veteran guys knew what they were going to get because the coaches told them. But, like, younger guys, we had no idea. We just had to be ready to go.
So we've discussed this before, and I think we'd agree, and came to the agreement that the way it exists, fans would be better off to see those team workout or the two team workouts rather than the game.
I would. If you can get into the Packers, you know, Ray Nitschke and see the joint session, I would do that. I would watch that. I mean, I'm not saying don't go to the preseason game because listen, like going into Lambeau and being there for the experience, it is. It's a special experience.
But from a football standpoint, you get more in the joint session.
Yes. 100%, because you're seeing good on good. You're seeing the ones versus the ones the entire time.
Yes.
I'm not trying to be mean. I'm not trying to be mean, but you're not seeing
good on goods because either you're not playing your goods or your opponent might. You might not see good from either team for a lot of the game. You're seeing,
correct.
That's what I think. You're seeing second teamers and sometime even third teamers.
Correct. Yes. You're seeing guys that will definitely not be there. Like, that's what you see in preseason. And when you're in the joint session, you're seeing one versus ones. That's what you're going to see from both teams, one versus
and
ones the entire time.
However session. Short that is, it's still longer than anything you would see in a game.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to get an hour and probably 10 minutes of practice of that type of, you know, environment. And you're going to get different types of periods. You're going to get 2 minute, you're going to get short yardage, you're going to get move the ball, you're going to get probably one-on-one drill. You're going to get a lot of different scenarios that you can watch, and it's entertaining, and it's good stuff. And then obviously always, I mean, unfortunately, this is the way there's always fights. It's always overly, it's always.
Especially the second day.
Oh, yeah. You should never have day two. There should never be a day two. There should never be a day two. But whenever there's a day two, there's always fights. It always goes that way. But anyway, that's
so do some guys get in fights in hopes that it limits the workout, or is it just they're just irritated? Get in a fight. That'll shorten things up.
I think that's probably happened more than once. I think that's happened. Yeah. Guys say, "Hey, let's just do this. We know that'll break this thing up." But the joint session we did with LaFleur with Houston, I just know the second day it got a little chippy. We'll just put it that way. It got a little chippy towards the end of day two. And you just knew it was going to go there.
Why more chippy than even a game, right? Even more chippy than a game.
Yeah, because, you know, you go and watch the film the next day and your coach is yelling at you for getting embarrassed by that guy and you get ripped. And then you go back out there and you're not going to let that happen again. And
there's no score as much to be the factor as there is in a regular game. It's all just watching the individual battles.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What do I want? I want a day three joint session.
Oh, God.
They'll just walk out and start slugging. Brian Bulaga, Homer Hour, and we're going to get to the top 10 rankings of NFL quarterbacks as this one. I mean, there are various ones. This one, Pebbles from ESPN, right?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, and now I am going to be curious to see how Brian Bulaga does it next.
You're listening to the Homer Hour on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
The Brian Bulaga Homer Hour. I don't know where he is, and I don't really care, but I know he's on the show. I am at the Bo Ellis Golf Tournament in Lake Geneva as they raise money for the Nicole Ellis Foundation, and they like to, and I like to, talk about the championship of 1977. Doesn't matter how many years away it is, as long as you were alive and old enough to remember it. I don't think a championship counts. I don't know what age you remember. Brian Bulaga, the Brian Bulaga Homer Show. What's the earliest age you remember a sporting event so that if your team, Iowa or the Bears or whoever you rooted for, won a championship, you remembered it?
What would be the Bulls when Jordan was with the Bulls?
Okay.
I mean, I remember all the. So I remember, so I was born in 89, so I don't really remember the first three as clear. Obviously I was born in 89, so the first three weren't as vivid to me. But the second three were very clear to me for Jordan and the Bulls. So
Dennis Rodman.
Yeah, Rodman and Harper and Pippen and Kukoc and Longley and all those guys. Like that's engraved in my brain. The team is engraved in my brain. And what's funny and about this, we know what's a great story, but I mean, this is great. You'll love this. Member guest every year at Concession, the club I belong to. There's a member here every year. Tony Kukoc is his guest. So I get to hang out. I get to talk with Kukoc every year when he comes down here. It's amazing. Yeah, I love it. It's fantastic.
So you're so nice. You know what my first question would have been?
What?
Like, did Jordan really hate you? Or what's really? And then they did this when they went back, what is it, Last Dance, where they talked about when they played against him in the Olympics and that he and Pippen, Jordan and Pippen, guarded Kukoc so he could never score a point. Or I don't know if maybe he didn't score a point when they played Croatia. But you wouldn't be so mean as to make that your first question.
No,
he seems like a nice guy. Plus, he was a very good player.
Yeah, no, it didn't. And it doesn't – he didn't seem to have any – ill will towards Jordan. I mean, it seemed like they talked quite a bit. So, like, it didn't seem like they have any issue. But he does say in a joking manner, or maybe he's not joking, he does say he's the reason why the team was so good. But I don't know if he's joking.
No, I've heard that too. I would say that he's probably more honest, and I don't know if he's responding to Scottie Pippen, because there is truth to Jordan didn't win anything until Pippen came. But we know this, Pippen ain't winning anything without Jordan. So, but, you know, and that's why I think Jerry Krause is the genius in the whole thing in terms of it took a while and he put a group together. And then Jordan leaves for 2 years and he has to put an entirely different group together and he does it again. That certainly speaks of the greatness of Jordan, but it also speaks to to find another mixture. There was no Dennis Rodman in the first group.
No, none. And to think that Dennis Rodman was going to work in that group is a whole gamble on its own. Think about that.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yes, there's no way you can know that. But I think that is – there's one thing about we said winning, being in the club. There is another benefit of being around a legacy, like a team that's so good. I mean, I was a Packer fan. I remember not all of the titles, but most of them. And, you know, to win 5 and 7 years and 4 and 6 years, it's just hard to believe you're that good. And then it's just a question of how greedy are you as a fan? I want another one. I want another one. But that's something different where you feel like, I've said this, where you feel like you were lucky to have been around. I feel lucky to have been around to see Michael Jordan, lucky to have been around to see to see Tiger Woods or various different people. And you can imagine others have the same way with the you know, if you were around in the 50s and saw Mickey Mantle and or whatever the sport yeah. would be, where someone's like that, that's special too. But you may not be the same, but they ain't nothing like being in the club.
Nope. There's nothing like it. Nothing like it.
And all right, so now we get to the top 10. Pebble, you have the list. There have been a number of ones.
Correct. This is ESPN's list, though.
ESPN.
Yep. Their executive coaches and scouts ranking the NFL's top 10 quarterbacks for the upcoming right. season. They've been coming out with these different lists for running back, offensive lineman, et cetera. But the people have been really waiting for this one, for the list of the top 10 quarterbacks entering the 2025 season. If we go through the list here, starting at number one, we've got Patrick Mahomes at number one. Number two is Josh Allen.
Okay, let's do number one. Without even listing the other, I don't think Mahomes is number one anymore. Jackson's number one to me. You have to factor in the teammates and all the kind of stuff, and he certainly had better running backs. But I think he's the best quarterback in the game. But doesn't determine whether you win. And it's hard to argue with Mahomes because he's won so much. But last year he just wasn't as good.
Yeah. So but are we talking? You're making a perfect point. Are we talking the best, like the team, or are we talking the best quarterback?
No. Because I'll defer to Pebble. You can let us know. No, I think to me, I always do it as the best player, playing the position, the best quarterback.
Correct.
I don't
yes.
know how else you can do it, because otherwise, the guy's getting credit for his teammates. He didn't do anything for that. You know, the best example is Burrow. Burrow is just so unfortunate. I don't know the last time a quarterback that good had a defense that bad.
So I was just about to say, why wouldn't Burrow be considered number one?
He could be. Yes, I would agree. You could put him number one.
Yeah, look how he played. And you said Jackson. Jackson's unbelievable. You could say Allen is number one. How good Allen. Like, I mean, I'm not slighting Mahomes. I think Mahomes is obviously amazing, but like, was he the number one quarterback? I don't think so. But
and not last year, we saw in the playoffs what happened when his team wasn't really good. Yep. I don't know, but there's a limit to what any quarterback can do. Yeah, no, that's how I look at it. I try to figure out, all right, this is what I would say. Would Kansas City have been better last year with some quarterbacks other than Patrick Mahomes? And I would say yes. You could easily say Burrow. You could easily say, and I don't, the other issue is you can just say, well, he had a bad year last year. I still think he's number one. It just, you know, it's like, I don't know is the question who's the best quarterback now? Isn't that what it is, Pebble?
Yes. The question is who's the best quarterback now? It goes through different, let me see here how many, in terms of ballots here. They had 70 total ballots. Right. And the ranking, voters gave us their 10 best players at a position, and we compile the results and rank candidates based on the number of top 10 votes, composite average, and dozens of interviews with research and film study held from ESPN's Matt Bowen.
Because I think you could say, if I wanted to, Mahomes had a bad year last year. I still think he's the best, which that's a decent answer. That's why it. I don't know that I would ever get that upset. Like, how can – because it's hard – if you're judging it on the talent, I'm being forced to guess how good a player would be on a different team. Like, how good would Kansas City have been last year with Burrow? And or just, like, who seemed to play the position better? For example, Philadelphia, they changed the team.
Yes.
You know,
100%.
And you have the same quarterback, and then was just average the year before, and this year he's significantly better than average. Oh wait, maybe that's because of a new player on the team.
Mm-hmm.
It's to me it's tough to answer that question. You know, who pick? Pick Philadelphia. You know. A quarterback that you believe would have been even better instead of if they had a different quarterback instead of Hurts. And then to me, that's the question. Would the team have been better with Jackson? I think so.
Yes.
And would it have been better with Burrow? I mean, Jackson, yes, to me is easy because I think he does just about everything better. Burrow's not going to run as well, but all right. We'll get to the fourth quarter and then a special half hour with Jim Boylan, who was part of that NCAA championship team. But more than that, with the discussion about Giannis, he was a Bucks interim coach. He was at Cleveland with LeBron James. I don't know that there's anybody who's had more experience dealing with superstars of various teams. So that'll be from 6 until 6:30. The fourth quarter with Brian Bulaga next.
Welcome back to the Homer Hour on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
The Brian Bulaga Homer Hour, discussing ESPN and picking the top quarterbacks. And, of course, standard of this show, everything is important only as it relates to the Green Bay Packers. Who cares who was picked one, two, three? All that matters is, where is Jordan Love and where should he be? Bebel, where's Jordan Love?
Jordan Love is ranked 12th in this list. He's in the honorable mention category, one spot behind C.J. Stroud, who was selected 11th.
So there are actual positions after 10, right?
So they have honorable mention, which is C.J. Stroud and Jordan Love, and then they have also receiving votes category, which is Kyler Murray, Brock Purdy, Dak Prescott, Aaron Rodgers, Tua, and Bo Nix.
Purdy did not make the top 12, huh?
Wow. Who's in the top 10? After Mahomes, who's the top 10?
Yeah, give us.
So after Mahomes, the top 10 is Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, Jaden Daniels is 5, Matthew Stafford 6, Justin Herbert 7, Jared Goff 8, Jalen Hurts 9, and 10th is Baker Mayfield.
Wow. Baker at 10.
He's been good the last, what, couple of years? Or?
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, go ahead.
Think about that. The Browns rejected him. Look how that turned out for them.
Yeah, like, they've made a number of mistakes.
Yeah.
And all right, so Jordan Love at 12, and your first thought when you heard that was,
I'm not shocked by it. I'm not shocked by it simply because those names in the top 10 are household names, and those names have performed well over multiple years. I will say that they performed well over multiple years. Hurts, obviously, coming off a Super Bowl, his stock's going to be high, right? Like, that, his stock's going to be very high. But those guys that are on that top 10 list have performed really well. So it doesn't completely shock me that Love is in that, you know, 12 range. I think if he performs well this year, he'll be in that top 10 list without a doubt.
I have one really strong thought, and that is they don't believe he was hurt. If you believe he was hurt last year and affected his play, there's no way he's 12. Not after what he did the year before, the second half of the season, and in the playoffs. Because the answer would be, well, I still think he's the same. Maybe you drop a little. Maybe he drops to, I don't know, 7 something, if you believe that he's hurt, right?
Well, I guess it's still based off what have you done for me lately. Like,
yeah,
that's what that list is, you know, besides Mahomes. Because that's not – Mahomes is excluded from what have you done for me lately on that list.
Yeah.
But I think
it's true of all of us. Our judgment of Jordan Love last season is based solely on how hurt was he. I mean, do you think he, and even when he came back, was he less? And if you think he was just hurt, then you probably haven't lost much, if any, of your belief on how talented he is.
No, I don't have any
right
belief in how good he is. No, I have no
right
disbelief.
Last year, it's just hard to judge because he was hurt and he couldn't be himself. And we'll have another chance to see that this year, right? All right. 1977 Marquette, Jim Boylan and Giannis and LeBron James. Special half hour coming up next from the Bo Ellis Golf Tournament.
It's time for the best 60 minutes of your life. This is the Homer Hour, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Here's Emmy Award winner Homer.
Of the Homer Hour because I've wanted to talk to Jim Boylan for like 5 years, and every year I tell him, I will get together, and I never did. Had you pretty much given up and just said, every year at the Bo Ellis tournament, he says it, but it never happens.
I just know that you're going to say, hey, we got to get together and do something. And I'm like, okay, yeah, great. Call me anytime, Homer. And, you know, here I am again.
Here you are again. And again, it's the Bo Ellis Golf Tournament for the Nicole Ellis Foundation. But in talking with Brian Bulaga, I said, part of it to me is just to be around people who experienced a national championship. It's forever. And I said, you just need one. You want more, but you're in the club forever.
Yeah. It's a great club to be in. It's coming up on 50 years in 27. So, I mean, the time just goes flying by. But I'll never forget, we were in the locker room after the game, and Coach McGuire said to us, he said, This moment right here is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger in your life as time goes on. And, you know, it really has. And you just, you know, you just have those memories and those connections with people. You accomplish something that a lot of people strive for. You know, all the Marquette teams over the years, great teams with great players. And, you know, it takes skill for sure. It takes talent for sure. And it takes some luck. And, in 1977, we had the ball bounce our way several times, and we came up with the plays we needed to make at the right time, and we were able to win that championship. And I can't wait for another Marquette team to win one, honestly. So cheering on Chaka and his team, and they've had some great teams over the last couple of seasons, and so hopefully that continues.
You want them to feel what you felt.
Exactly. I mean, it was an amazing feeling. You know, the strange thing for me personally, when the buzzer sounded, there was kind of a numbness that came over me, like, you know, you can't believe it actually happened. And so, you know, you don't really know how to act. I was just like, you know, next thing I know, I saw Bo, and Bo hugged me. And then I was like, okay, this is it, man. You know, and you know, just something really special. And, you know, I grew up watching the UCLA teams with Kareem and Bill Walton, and watching them dominate and watching those Final Fours and just imagining what it would be like. And, you know, there we were. And you know, with Al's last season, it was, you know, you felt special in the sense that you felt like basketball was going to give something back to Al McGuire for all that he had done for the sport, and it happened, and it's still to this day I have a hard time kind of, you know, articulating how that feeling was.
I went back and watched the game because I remember parts of it, but like, you had a huge lead, and then North Carolina goes on like an 18-4 run early in the second half, and it's gone.
Yeah, they came out. I mean, right out of the second half. And, you know, we kind of controlled the tempo in the first half. We had, we were, you know, executing. We were playing our game. And then they came out in the second half, and they started to play their game, which was, you know, higher pace, you know, with Phil Ford and Michael Corrin and Walter Davis. I mean, they had an amazing team. When I look at the results and I say we won the NCAA championship, which is amazing, but we beat North Carolina.
But I know why you beat North Carolina. You know the reason.
I don't know why.
Because there was a player on the team who I believe, now Tony Smith, who I work with, says I make stuff up, so I've always said this, who could have gone probably anywhere in the country. He went to Assumption College in Worcester, Mass., which, by the way, was where my uncle, Dr. Mike True, taught for about 30 years. I'm the only one who knew how to say Worcester. No one else did. And I've always said you went there because there was a member of your family, I couldn't remember who, was sick.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you could have gone literally to any school in the country. Tony Smith, I hope you're listening. Is that story accurate?
That is 100% accurate. My mom got – I was being recruited. My visits were to Kentucky and Notre Dame and Maryland and Virginia and schools like that. And my older brother, Michael, played at Assumption. So I had been going up to Assumption for the 4 years that he was there. I was just a companion to his girlfriend who used to drive up from Jersey City. And she's like, I don't want to drive alone. Come with me. And I'd be like, okay. So anyway, so I was extremely comfortable. Joe O'Brien, who went on to be the executive director of the Basketball Hall of Fame for over 20 years, I believe. Was the coach, and he was a great coach, and they played an up-tempo game, and I went. So I was struggling with, my mom was really sick, and I didn't know what to do, and I didn't know where I wanted to go, and I wasn't quite sure about things, and so I just said, you know what, I'm comfortable at Assumption. I'm a basketball player. I can. I've seen Joe O'Brien, the coach at Assumption, make my brother into the NCAA Division II Player of the Year.
All right, so you decided to go there, but you were there 2 years. After 1 year, how was your mom? And then I'm assuming you could have gone to many places. I know coaches mm-hmm. who recruited you. They're still – ain't no way that guy's staying at yeah. Assumption College. That's yeah. what I'm thinking.
Well, you know, back then it was more of a hands-off thing back then. They didn't really – you know, it's not like today where, you know, guys are constantly looking to poach people from other teams. But after my first year, we had a great year. We finished third in the country, went to the Final Four, and lost in the semis, won the consolation game, which they used to have way back when, and we did the exact same thing the next year. So 2 years in a row, we made the Final Four.
You never thought of leaving after a year, or you did?
It was in the back of my head. But then after my second year, I was like, you know, I really need to test myself a little bit more. And so I started sending out feelers to teams that had recruited me. Like
North Carolina.
And North Carolina. And
this is how you won the national chair. Dean Smith won it because Dean Smith had a rule that he would not ever recruit a transfer other than someone said Bob McAdoo. But I thought, what is his problem? This wasn't a guy going to transferring to school. He went to the school because his mom was sick. Now, I'm incapable of comprehending that Dean Smith wouldn't have made an exception for that. I don't know how much he really wanted you, but if Jim Boylan's on North Carolina and not on Marquette, Marquette does not win the national championship, and if he had offered you a scholarship, I believe that you would have gone to North Carolina. But again, Tony Smith would say, I'm making that up. So now we find out.
That North Carolina was my first choice. That's where I wanted to go. And Joe O'Brien, God bless him, he's passed away now. He called Dean Smith. He was my coach at Assumption. He called Dean Smith and said, "Hey, you know, Jimmy wants to transfer. He wants, you know, he really likes North Carolina. You got," and they said, "Well, let's think about it." And then he came back a few days later and said, "What you just said about not taking transfers." And his first line to Coach O'Brien was, "You know who you should call? You should call Al McGuire. He loves to take transfers." And that's kind of how that ball got rolling. And not 2 weeks later, I was heading to Milwaukee.
And my other great, so Tony Smith, if you're listening, the stories I've told are accurate. Now, this one I'm not sure. Because you had been coming in as a transfer, Hank Raymonds, who I believe took care of all the academics in terms of what players needed, he signed you up for like 28 credit hours your first semester. Now, I'm not sure, for people who don't know, 15 was normal. 18 is if they found an easy class for you, then you could get ahead. But I think the number that you had was significantly above 15 and 18.
It was crazy. I walked into the registration at the old gym where they used to have it. And as soon as I walked in, Hank was right there. He was on me like white on rice. I got your schedule. I got it all mapped out for you. This is what you're going to do. And I was new. I didn't know anything. So I was just, okay, okay, great. And I think I had 24 credits. That's
it's not possible to take 24 credits.
I know. So then the next semester, when I went to register, I eased my way into the old gym and I peeked around the corner and I saw Hank standing there. I went in the other direction. And I said, no, I'll take care of this myself.
All right, to the championship game. The game was won at the free throw line. Late in the game, you had, and people don't realize, there was no 10 fouls in automatic two. There were 8 1-and-1s. And the only person who missed a free throw was Bernard Toon. He missed the front end. I think it would have been a technical or something. But either way, the other 7 1-and-1s, the Marquette Warriors, hit 14 of 14, both ends of 7 1-and-1s. That's why you won the game. Accurate?
Accurate. I believe we were second in the country that year in free throw percentage. I shot 94, but I didn't shoot like a high volume. Butch Lee shot almost 300 or 250, somewhere around there, and Butch shot 86%. So Bo could make free throws, and Bernard could make free throws, and Gary Rosenberger could make free throws. And so, yeah, I mean, we had a group of guys who could step to the line in a pressure situation and make, like you said, a 1-and-1. It was no two shots. It was 1-and-1. You missed the first one, you're out of luck, pal. So, yeah, I think that was a super important key for us in those tournament games.
Talking with Jim Boylan again, part of the 1977 championship team at Marquette. Also, I believe he's in the Hall of Fame as an interim NBA coach. I don't know how many have been interims for two different teams. I was with LeBron, and so we can talk about the NBA. But when I said I was talking to Jim Boylan, one of the Marquette fans, you've got to talk to him about the fight that Al McGuire had with whoever it was in the earlier tournament game against Cincinnati. And I said, all right, I will. So...
Well, that was quite a game. First of all, kind of backstory of that a little bit. Maurice Lucas came to the game. Maurice was at the game. Now, he's playing for Portland at the time. He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated as the enforcer. We're playing, and in the first half, we're not playing so well against Cincinnati. And there's a timeout. Next thing I know, Maurice is over in our huddle, and he's punching guys and shoving guys and like, come on, you guys, what's going on? So anyway, that was a little side story, which was fabulous. But Al, you were allowed to yell at Al. You could say whatever you want to him. He didn't really care. He'd go right back at you, so on and so on. He didn't like when you made defensive mistakes. Bernard Toon made two defensive mistakes in 3 minutes. Timeout. We get out to, we're in the huddle, and Al's yelling at him, and Bernard's yelling back, and this is, so now we get to halftime, and I think we're down 3 or 4 points, something like that. We go into the locker room, and we're kind of all sitting there waiting for Coach to come in. Finally, Coach comes in, and he's pacing back and forth, back and forth, and I'm like, oh boy, this something's going to happen right here. And he spots Bernard sitting kind of in the corner, and he just goes after him, and they were exchanging, pleasantries in the first half. And Al said, no one calls me this and no one calls me that. Next thing you know, got a little physical.
Who threw the first punch? Come on.
Coach threw the first punch. And Bernard jumped up out of his seat and tackled Coach, and they went over a score, a training table where you get your ankles taped and all that, and there was a curtain, separated the shower. The two of them rolled over that. Next thing you know, Rick Majerus finally wrestles Bernard away from Al, because they're like literally, they're on top of each other, and takes him out of the locker room. But the crazy thing was, one of those arenas where you went right through the rotunda to get to your locker room. So when the door burst open, all the fans were lined up getting their hot dogs at halftime and their sodas. And next thing you know, you hear this door just explodes and Rick and Bernard go out. And the fans all turn around and look. And they're looking like they're wide-eyed. And next thing you know, the door closes and all hell breaks loose. We go out in the second half. We play a great second half. We beat Cincinnati. First game of the championship season. Game's over. We come back in. Media comes in. What did Coach say at halftime? And even back then, when you can get away with a lot of stuff you can't get away with these days as far as coach-player relationships. I said, yeah, you may want to talk to Coach about that one. And so I just let that one go.
Wow. He told me this would be good, and he was correct. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll get to more Marquette, because it's been enough years where I need to ask you, just explain Al McGuire to people, because to me it's almost like Vince Lombardi. There are a lot of people around now have no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been a long time, and there are people I know, younger people, Vince Lombardi, who, what? They don't know the essence of him, as they may not know the essence of Al McGuire, and that will be next.
This is the Homer Hour on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
Every job is done one shovel at a time. No one wants to hear a grown man whine. And I like
to half hour of the Homer Hour because I promised to Jim Boylan, one-time interim coach for the Milwaukee Bucks, one-time interim coach for the Chicago Bulls, an assistant with Cleveland when LeBron won his championship. I think it was 2016. And for years I said, we'll do this. I never did. And now I get a chance, so I'm thankful you can do it and thankful they found a half hour. Give 60 seconds on Al McGuire to try to explain to people, because I'm sure when that occurred in that locker room, people would have thought the players are gone. This is the end of it, and I'm sure the players thought, well, one more story.
Yeah, well, you know, Coach was a unique character, first of all. I tell people all the time, I left practice almost every single day, MFing that guy, and because he would drive you nuts. I mean, he would drive you nuts. He'd push you and prod you, and you know, he was a New York wise guy. He had a lot of wisecracks, you know, but I grew up in Jersey City, New Jersey, and I knew 10 guys like Al McGuire. Tough, honest, intelligent, and you know, Al was such a showman that people, I think, kind of lost what a great coach he was. He was.
Well, I have a theory. I say he's the greatest defensive coach in the history of the state. Dick Bennett gets a lot of credit and mm-hmm. deserves it, Paul. But people don't know unless you were around. That was Marquette. It seems weird given how crazy he was, but he was a defensive guy, right?
100% defensive guy. And, you know, that's the way you practice.
You were second in the country, I believe, the year they won the title in points given up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, like we played a slower game. You know, people can argue that and say we played a slower game. But when you played against an Al McGuire team, you knew that points were going to be tough. Rebounds were going to be tough, and that you were going to face a team that was cohesive. A lot of people would look at Marquette and say, you know, Al is this bigger-than-life coach, kind of a ringmaster. But I always would tell people, with the uniforms, the crazy uniforms, and Al's flamboyant quotes and things that he would say to the media, we seemed like a very loose group of players and a really loose kind of team, but we were the most disciplined team in the country. We were disciplined on offense, and we were disciplined on defense. Now, surrounding us was a circus, but when we were on the court and he was kind of orchestrating us, it was business, and it was... We do it this way, and then we do it this way all the time. We show up a certain way. We bring a certain attitude, and people would kind of look at us and think, you know, they're just kind of a fly-by-night kind of group of guys. They're undisciplined, and they're all inner-city kids and this and that. And that was so far from the truth. We were the most disciplined team in the country.
Talking with Jim Boylan again, part of the 1977 Marquette Championship team. It's the Bo Ellis Golf Tournament. They do it every year for the Nicole Ellis Foundation. And this would be year 7 in which I said, I got to talk to you, Jim. We're going to do something on the show. This is the first time it has occurred. Everybody wondering about Giannis and is he going to stay with the Bucks? And you've spent a lot of time with great players. And I don't know how much interaction you ever had with Giannis, but I can't think of anybody better to ask just about the dynamics of the NBA now versus all the different roles that you had?
Yeah. You know, it's a tough thing. You know, I spent 4 years in Cleveland with LeBron James, which was an amazing experience for me because that guy, I coached in the NBA for 25 years. For 21 of those years, other than the 4 years I spent with LeBron, every single team that I coached, we were always looking for a leader. We were always looking for the best player to take over the team.
Seriously?
Yeah. We're always looking for the best player to take over the team. And who can lead our team? Who can be the guy to set the tempo? And that guy came in. He was the first one in the gym every day. He was the last one to leave. He days off? No.
What's he practicing?
He just taking care of his body, lifting weights, getting up shots, and he just set the tempo for everybody. And I haven't spent time with Giannis, but, you know, in today's NBA, it seems to me that putting together a team has kind of gone through some changes. You know, I'm looking at I'm looking at OKC this year, and I'm looking at Indiana this year, and I'm seeing how obviously you need star players, but I think you can also win with a whole bunch of guys who are committed and play both sides of the court. So you're committed on offense, you're committed on defense, and if you have enough guys like that on your team, then you have a chance to contend. And I think OKC proved that this year, and I think Indiana proved that this year. So everything that I've read and seen about Giannis is that he loves Milwaukee, and I anticipate if I'm the Bucks, I don't want to part with that talent because they're few and far between. So you're going to trade him somewhere. What are you going to get? And I think then it becomes a responsibility of the organization to do the best job that they can to put the players around him that can make him even greater than he already is. So you need guys who can shoot the ball. And you need guys who can defend. And if you have those two things, I think you got a good chance, especially with a guy like him who can dominate a game. And I've seen LeBron dominate games. And, it's different than football. It's different than a lot of other sports. If you have one superstar, I mean superstar player, which he is.
What does dominate the game mean to you? Or what does a player have to do?
You can give him the ball in the fourth quarter, and you're down six with 8 minutes to go, and give him the ball every time, and he makes the right play. Whether he's,
Oh, he's not necessarily going to score.
Not necessarily score. He's going to make the right play every time, and then that's why you need the surrounding players who can do the things. Giannis, obviously, is aggressive going to the hole. So you need to have guys around him that can knock down shots. You draw the defense in. You kick it out, and guys make shots. And when the Bucks won the championship, that's what they did. They had him in the middle, kind of going to work, and kicking it out to Lopez and the other guys, Middleton and people like that. And they're making shots. I watched from afar, but I was so excited for the city of Milwaukee and watching the fans and the enjoyment they got out of that was a sweet moment. Even though I wasn't involved with the team, I still loved it.
So you did everything. You were a head coach, you're an interim coach. What was the best part of the NBA? I was going to say you're like Forrest Gump. You were everywhere.
I think the best part of the NBA is I was in the league for 25 years, and I can honestly say that there are guys who have bad raps. People think a certain way about someone. And I only had, and I won't say who it is because that would be wrong of me, I only had one guy. One guy in my 25 years that I thought, man, this guy's really, a terrible person.
One
guy. The other guys, they're all young kids. They're they have nothing, and then suddenly they have everything. And then you want them to be absolutely perfect. Wow. And that doesn't work that way.
Well, we've run out of time. And I'm glad because you said you had a story about me, but we've run out of time. You'll have to wait till next year, which could be another 7 years. Jim Boylan, you've been everywhere, and champions forever. You're in the club.
That's right.
Thanks for the time.
All right. Thank you.
Jim Boylan, back to ESPN National next.